Good to be with you this morning. I understand that we won't be using the PowerPoint this morning, so I thought I'd come down amongst the people off Mount Sinai and come down and get a little closer to you. We want to talk this morning about really raising our children, instilling faith in our children. As I have looked at this subject from a Bible perspective and from a church history perspective, I can confidently say this. God's people, historically, have done a terrible job in instilling faith in their children. You see predictable patterns over time. Sometimes it's called the third generation effect, of how you may have one faithful generation, a generation that we had to stand on their own, and by the time you get to the third generation, you end up with something very different. Now, I'm not telling you that to discourage you. I'm telling you that because we need to understand the enormity of the task at hand. You can instill biblical faith in your children, but it is going to take commitment. In the book of Judges, we read about the typical pattern that you find with the nation of Israel as you study the Old Testament history. Judges 2 and verse 7, it says, "So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old." Then you read about that generation, verse 10. "When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them which did not know the Lord, nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they forsook the Lord God their fathers who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around about them. And they bowed down to them and they provoked the Lord to anger." That's the pattern of the book of Judges. That's the pattern of Old Testament history. That's the pattern of church history. So again, understand, apostasy is a common occurrence. And it's a generational thing. Now, how are we going to avoid going down that path? Turn to the book of Deuteronomy, if you would. To me, and I'm glad I'm not using the PowerPoint here because I didn't include this verse, but in Deuteronomy 6, if someone would come to you, as they did in the days of Jesus, and somebody asked this question, "What is the greatest commandment?" What would you say? Well, you'd quote Deuteronomy 6. What Jesus quoted. In Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength." Now, keep your finger there. What's a great way to know how much you love the Lord? If you really do that, you love the Lord, you mean it. Look at the next verses. Talk about teaching children. "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hands, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Why do you do that? Because it's in you. You love God. That's you. You mean it. I'm no expert. And I'm still, the jury's certainly still out on the job that Yvette and I have tried to do with our children. And I don't put us up as an example, although we dearly want to. Our children go to heaven. It's the most important goal for us. But I've seen people who did not have a great education, who suffered from mental illness, who were poor and poverty-stricken, but they really love God. And I watch people in those circumstances raise beautiful children. And I've seen those who had great intellect and were great Bible students, but they would have children that as soon as they got out of the house, buddy, they were gone from serving God. And so again, really, sometimes I'll tell people in my lessons that I preach, what do you want to take home with you? This point right here. If you take nothing else, really, the point I want to make to you, you got to mean it. You got to mean it. It's who you are. It's not what you become when you come in the building. It's not a little mask that you wear. You got to love the Lord God with all your soul and heart. And this is a part of your everyday life. When we talk about three generations in our study, we're going to be talking about the generation that came out of Egypt. They crossed the Red Sea. We're going to talk about the generation that crossed the Jordan. And then we're going to talk about the next generation. And sadly, we've already read about them. When you talk about a failed generation, the first generation that came out of the Red Sea was a very much a failed generation. They were a people who didn't know God. And that's very interesting. You know, you heard the old saying, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. That generation, how in the world could they be faithless? They saw all these signs. They saw the miracles. They saw the Red Sea part. They saw the pillar of fire by night and the pillar of cloud by day. But sometimes there are people who don't know God and they don't try to find God. And they just end up just doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Proverbs 22 and verse 15. We read about the importance of the home. The importance of when you really love God and you listen to His wisdom, you understand that you don't give children everything they want. You understand that there is a process of denial, a process of instruction, how suffering can be some of the greatest opportunities to teach a child. Proverbs 22:15 says, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him." Proverbs 29 and verse 15, very similarly, says, "The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." I've seen children that were raised by their parents where they basically gets everything they want. I think there's an old 40s jazz band song or something, because what Lola wants, Lola gets. I don't know. I think I heard it this morning and listened to the jazz band music driving down here. And you know, I've heard that sometimes said about some children of parents, that whatever the child wants, the child gets. Now, you know what happens when a child does that? The child comes out of the home with a terrible self-esteem. They come out of the home with an inability to relate to others and work with others. They come out of a home with a false concept of God. Because one of the most humbling things in my life that I've came to realize before I had children is the first concept your child is going to have on the nature of God is going to be what they see in their parents, and particularly the father. And that certainly made me want to be very careful in how I respond. My God is not the spoiling God. Oh, you do whatever you want to. You'll forgive it anyway. You can go anyway. No, 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 no. He's a loving God. But see, children understand that when there are no rules and there are no discipline, they are neglected. They feel bad about themselves. They need instruction from adults. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, in verse 1, again, I know that in the church there are many good things that we try to do in a local congregation. We try to provide for excellent Bible classes. We try to provide for good teaching. We try to provide for an atmosphere where brethren can grow in the faith. But the one thing I'll tell you, the church cannot take the place of it, and that is the home. We cannot take the place of the home. You can have a good home and everything else be going bad, and you can have problems in church, and you'll still find children that love the Lord well balanced. In 1 Corinthians 10, we read about the generation that crossed the Red Sea. God provided for them all kinds of opportunities. Notice how it's described. "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that our fathers were under the cloud and all passed to the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. You know, I've heard some people say sometimes, buddy, if I could have just lived in those times and seen the miracles, if I could have seen the miracles of Christ, if I could have seen these great miracles, I would have believed in God. Faith is challenging. Real faith doesn't come through some one-shot step. Faith in God is trusting in God, knowing His character, coming to see Him and what He's like and loving Him and wanting to imitate Him. Signs are a tool to that end, but if you're shallow and you see the signs, it's sometimes like spoiled children. Sometimes you can push them and, you know, get mad for a moment and they'll light up for a moment. But, you know, we're talking about a biblical faith that's based upon a day-by-day development of character, not just seeing a sign and being awed at that sign at that moment. Keep reading. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their body was scattered in the wilderness. Now these things become our examples to the intent that we should not lust after things that they also lusted, nor that we become idolaters as some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. I find this humorous. Not that they fell away. But when you begin to read in this verse where it talks about how they lusted for evil things, one of the examples is found in Numbers 11. And you may say, well, what are the evil things they lusted after? Well, what were some of the things they wanted that caused God's wrath to pour out upon them? And, well, listen to what they did. Here, they wanted to go back to Egypt. They had been enslaved in Egypt, and one generation of firstborn were killed in Egypt. Here they were punished. They were slaves. They had no faith. They had no character. And when things went bad, oh, I want to go back over here. Now notice what they wanted. Was it gold, silver? What were they lusting after? Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlics. But now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. What? You know, when people are not developed in the home, they don't develop a character. They're like, have you ever seen adults that are little children? They never grow up. And it's amazing how people get upset over things that do not matter. I'll never forget years ago when I was living in the Birmingham area. Neighbor had built a house and nice neighborhood. He put a for sale by owner sign in his house. And I went by to him. I said, well, I hate to see that you're moving from the neighborhood. Yeah, we're moving. And I started talking to him, why are you moving? It took him a little while to tell me. He says, well, we don't like the restaurants in Gardendale. And I just kind of had to bite my tongue. You are selling your house and you're moving to another place because you don't like the restaurants. Okay, well, that's not necessarily an evil thing. I mean, I would never think that way, you know. But anyway, it's interesting here. These people were ready to go back into slavery over something so simple. And you know what I found over the years? When people do not build a faith in God, it is amazing what they give up their soul for. Some people may get mad, get another Christian and quit the Lord. Somebody may want to get a little more money at a job and they put themselves in a position to compromise their faith. It's almost like, I sometimes will joke about you could take a young child and you can take a check for $1 million and you can take some shiny coins and rattle it. What would the child want? Wants the shiny coins. And that's the nature. When you don't develop a biblical faith, Satan can take you any direction he wishes. Numbers 26. Before the crossing of the Jordan River, the next generation, Moses tries to make a point upon that the generation, the new generation. And they're getting ready to cross the Jordan in verse 64 of Numbers 26. But among these there was not a man of those who were numbered by Moses and Aaron, the priest when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. So there was not left a man of them except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Chapter 32, similar point is made, verses 7 through 13. Here Moses is speaking. And he's challenging them in the crossing of the Jordan and how there were some who wanted to live on the other side of the Jordan, which was okay, but are you going to fight? Are you going to be like the previous generation? He says, and now why will you discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord had given them? Thus your fathers did when I sent them away from Kadesh Barnea to the land. And you go on and read about this. Here, one of the things that this new generation could learn from is the mistakes of the previous generation. God's people are not always faithful. There are times you have to start over. And many times you can look back to what your parents did and maybe your grandparents. You can look back and you can see mistakes. One generation doesn't have to follow the other. It's good if they follow in faith, but sometimes as we see here, one generation can serve, if nothing else, for a bad example. Roman numeral 2. Let's talk about the next generation. New generation had another body of water that was flooded. And they were going to cross. They're going to go to a land they had never gone before. One thing about a biblical faith, the reason why you have courage to go places you've never gone before is because you know your God. For whatever reason, it's kind of interesting. How did a faithless generation end up having a faithful generation follow it? I'm not sure I can give you all the answers to that. Maybe it was the hardness in the wilderness. Maybe it was the teaching of Moses. I don't know what it was. But now this generation believed in God. And when you believe in God, you don't always get caught up in the familiar, doing the same thing over and over again, the same failure over and over again. Joshua 3, verses 3 through 4. Joshua is preparing them for the great crossing. And he's telling them what's going to lie ahead, but he can't tell them everything that lies ahead. He says, and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests and the Levites bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before. You know, brethren, a biblical faith is not afraid to take paths that you haven't taken before. I know here in LaGrange, I know in this local church, you have some very interesting opportunities laid before you. You take it by faith. You take it on the basis of what God's Word says, and you're not fearful. Well, I've never heard of another congregation doing this. I've never heard of this. Well, I'm not talking about doing something beyond what God has said in His Word, but I'm talking about taking doors of opportunity. Every place that I've been, we've had very interesting opportunities that were given that a lot of people would have not ever taken. And I'm not trying to brag on us or brag on the people that we were with. But opportunities oftentimes come to you as a problem. And by taking on that problem by faith, there are tremendous doors that are open. For instance, I'll give you an example. When I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, we were putting out a bulletin for the first time. Church putting out a bulletin is nothing new. And got a call. Person said, did you send me this bulletin? Yes. I want to be taken off the mailing list. I'm Catholic. Okay. What's your name? So hung up and I decided, look at the bulletin. Did we put anything here that'd get him mad? I said, I don't see anything. Then I looked up in the files and he had called in requesting Bible material, one of our calling programs. So about 30 minutes later, I call him back. I said, hey, this is Larry Rouse. I wanted to call you back. I wanted to know why, you know, was there something wrong with the bulletin? He goes, oh, no, no, no. He says, I just only want Catholic literature. And I wasn't offended at you. And I said, well, I appreciate that. And knowing he had listened to our call-in radio program, and we take all kinds of questions, I said, could I ask a favor of you? Could I call on you sometime if somebody ever calls about what Catholics believe? Which people did. They'd call and they'd ask about contrasting a Catholic belief with the Bible. And I said, could I call on you to make sure I do not misrepresent Catholics? He said, I would love you to do that. And I appreciate that. Matter of fact, I want you to encourage you to write this address down. And here's an organization that would do the same thing. And they would help you too. I said, thank you. I wrote that organization. They sent a letter back to me about 2 weeks later. Stack of tracts. And they thanked me for writing them. And they said, we'd like to have a debate in Lincoln, Nebraska on this date. And we ended up having the debate. Our little church that we started from scratch of 30-something really organized and put together a debate where 1,600 people came to a one-night discussion. Now, you know, in that case, here was what looked like just an obstacle. How many of you have been to about 1,600 people? You know, I see that in so many places that there are opportunities that come up. And I will tell you, you have opportunities here. You have some great opportunities here. Take it by faith. It'll be amazing what God can do. That's what this next generation did. Unlike the previous generation, they didn't look back in fear. They went forward. They weren't like those that Jesus talked about in Luke 9:62 that He begins the plow and looks back, not fit for the kingdom. The crossing of the River Jordan was a very significant event. In Joshua 3, if you're still there, you read about how, you know, the crossing of the Jordan and what followed the crossing, that were things they needed to do. Verse 10, it says, but Joshua said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, that He will without fail drive out from you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girshites, and the Amorites and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over before you into Jordan. Now therefore take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from every tribe, and it shall come to pass as soon as the soles of the feet of the priest who bear the ark of the Lord and the Lord of the earth shall rest on the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, the water shall come down from upstream, and they shall stand up as a heap. And we could keep reading about this account, but could you imagine being there? Have you ever been at a flooded river? And this is that flood stage. There's an awesomeness to that. And there are times I'm thinking, I'm sure glad I'm not in that. You know, that's kind of first thing I think when I see something like that. I'm glad I'm not in that. I would, you know, it would be very difficult to survive. But now you start marching toward that flooded river. The priest ahead with the ark of the Lord. And the heels of the priest start coming down to that water. And shoo! You know, previous generation saw something probably greater than that with the Red Sea. But this generation is walking by faith. It's giving them courage for the future battles. You see, the previous generation didn't have courage. This generation was given courage, and they remembered it. It's interesting, before the crossing of the Jordan, there was teaching, 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 teaching. The heart of this teaching, God is faithful. The heart of this teaching, here's a path for you to go. You got to follow the Lord. Just as they were told to follow that ark, that's all they had to do is follow the ark. They didn't have to figure out how much water was coming down or how long they had to wait or all these other things. God's plan is simple. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to lead you. Trust me, trust me, trust me. You don't have to figure out all the variables of all the earth. You didn't trust me. Notice in Moses is in Numbers 33 how Moses constantly reminded them of the nature of God. There's no question why this generation is strong. I said earlier, I was kind of wondering why. Well, Moses talk. They heard Moses. In verse 50 of Numbers 33, it says, now the Lord spake to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you have crossed the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land before you, destroying their engraved stones, destroying all their molded image, and demolish all their high places. You shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell in it, for I have given you the land to possess. And you shall divide the land by lot as an inheritance among your families. To the larger you shall give a larger inheritance, and so on and so on. Now, verse 55. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, then it shall be that those whom you let remain shall be irritants in your eyes and thorns in your sides. And they shall harass you in the land where you dwell. Moreover, it shall be that I will do to you as I thought to do to them. You know, as you begin to see the teaching process that was used here is that, listen guys, this is going to be a battle. Walking by faith is never easy. Walking by faith, you never stay comfortable. You don't get in the comfort zone. You stay with the familiar. In this case, they had to drive people out. Remember our lesson on fellowship Friday night? We're talking about fellowship and baptism. That's one of the elements of fellowship. Fellowship, you make decisions that change relationships. And that can be very difficult. And that's the essence of what's being done here. You drive these people out because you do not want to have fellowship with them. They'll bring you into the worship of their gods. If you trust me, and you'll practice that. Another thing. He tries to warn them against pride. In Deuteronomy chapter 9, beginning in verse 1, you read about why do we get this land? I mean, there are people without a trained army. They're just a group of people without supplies. God provided for them. There's a group of people coming to a land that was familiar with war. They had walled cities. Deuteronomy 9 and verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over Jordan today and go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities greater and fortified up to heaven. A people great and tall, the descendants of Anakim, whom you know, of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the descendants of Anak? Therefore understand today that the Lord your God is He who goes over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and bring down before you. So you shall drive them out, destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said to you. Do not think in your heart, after the Lord your God has cast them out before you, saying, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me to possess this land. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out before you. It is not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you go in to possess their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord God drives them out from before you, that He may fulfill the word which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Therefore, understand that the Lord your God is not giving you this land to possess because of your righteousness. Let me tell you what you are, for you're a stiff-necked people. Wonder what kind of preaching will build a strong generation. Preaching that emphasizes God, preaching that emphasizes the loving nature of God and the righteousness of God, and preaching that will emphasize repentance and humility. When churches begin to look after numbers and want to make you feel good and want to get away from rules in order to bring in numbers, you are tearing down faith. And let me tell you, in the raising of your children, when you begin to think the Word of the Lord gets in the way of your children's happiness, you don't know God. When you know how to build a biblical faith through struggle and fight and pain and joy of accomplishment, this generation was fighting. This generation was having to take stands. And that's one of the tragedies I see in families of places that I preach to, that parents are so afraid, oh, my child's going to feel different. And nobody's going to services on Sunday morning on the band trip, and I don't want my child to feel different. They're going to a water park, and oh, I don't want them to be different. And there are many other examples you can see where there's compromise, 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 compromise. And then they fall away. I don't know why. I took them to church. You never let them build faith by letting their faith cost them something. Anyway. So this generation, they learned a lot of things. Moses' teaching provided for them where their parents did not. Roman numeral 3. What do you think the next generation would be like? The next generation that was taught by these people who walked by faith, who saw those cities taken, who had the leadership of Moses and Joshua and Caleb. What do you think their children would be like? Let me tell you what God did. God helped them with their Bible classes. God helped them with illustrations in their Bible classes. He provided not a PowerPoint presentation. But he definitely provides for a wonderful visual teaching aid. Have you ever seen divine teaching aids before? The Bible is filled with them. Here's one. In Joshua chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, here God prepared a teaching aid. And it came to pass that all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, take for yourselves 12 men for the people, one man from every tribe, and command them, saying, take for yourselves 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. You shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where you lodged tonight. Now notice, they were to take big old stones. Now notice, what are they going to do with this? Then Joshua called the 12 men whom he appointed from the children of Israel, one man from every tribe. And Joshua said to them, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and each one of you take upon a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel. Why are you doing this? Verse 6. That this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean? God was trying to help this generation. Teach your children. Now, what are they to say? Then you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be a memorial to the children of Israel forever. Now, let me think about this. Let's take two sets of parents. Let's take two dads. Maybe it's like the Andy Griffith show, and they're taking Opie to the Jordan to fish. I don't know. You know, just think of it. They're walking out, and here, you know, Opie's throwing rocks in the Jordan, and then they come with this big old pile of stones. Dad, what's this? Oh, Dad, what this is where we put some stones up when we crossed the River Jordan and the water separated, and this is where we crossed. You remember we taught you that. Oh, okay, let's go fishing. Now, that parent would have taught the facts that they crossed the River Jordan. Let me take another parent. What do these stones mean? And the parent looked at those stones, and you could see the change in the complexion of that parent. Maybe even a tear come to the eye. Son, sit down. Let me tell you what happened. And then he began to describe in detail the flood and describe the power of God. And said, I saw this. And not only this, this was just a indication of the power of God. And then we were able to drive the people out. And this God is your God. Do you see where there's a different kind of teaching? One where they mean it. One where they trust God. And matter of fact, I would suggest to you that before they ever gone to the Jordan, they'd already heard this story. And they'd already heard these things said, and it was repeated, and it was repeated, it was repeated. If you're going to teach your children, you've got to mean it. Too many of us teach catechisms. You know what a catechism is? You got the answer and the question memorized. What's the purpose of baptism? Question, answer, for the remission of sins. That's wonderful. I'm not against catechisms. I'm not against teaching on a factual basis, but that is only the first level. You may say, I'm not as good a teacher as somebody else. I know, I understand. But you can mean it. And I'll tell you again, when you mean it, your children will see it. There's not only the spoken word, but there's the unspoken word. A lot of communication comes from unspoken, say, the ways that we communicate.
Our children.
Oh, well, let's talk about this generation, though. How did they do? How did the generation that walked by faith, that took the land, how did they do? We've already read the verse. You go back to Judges 2. The next generation that came, the generation that no longer knew, the leaders, Judges 2, 7 through 12. I'm in Joshua. No wonder I'm having trouble finding it. Okay, Judges 2, 7 through 12. Basically, when the people that outgrew, that lived longer, then they did not know Moses, they did not know Joshua, Caleb. They the next generation. What did they do? Verse 10 of Judges 2. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them which did not know the Lord nor the work which He had done for Israel. This congregation's got a lot of children. Maybe some of you have not yet married, or married, not yet have children. One of the great blessings in your life will be to have built a biblical faith in your children. And you got to give your children what is in you. Sometimes people ask me, what's the best thing I can give my children? First off, is a good relationship with your mate. They need, you know, you're going to build faith. You've got to have a good atmosphere within the home to build faith. And then you've got to share that faith, that genuine faith that is in your heart. Each generation's got to face this battle. We're in Roman numeral 3 now. Each generation has to fight the battle of making faith their own. And the Bible talks about, you know, apostasy in 2 Timothy 4. We won't read the verse, but there comes a time where within the church there are those that have itching ears. And many follow after those ways. One of the greatest blessings that I've had in my life in the working with my children has been this. I made a choice, Yvette and I made a choice, about 6 years ago, to move to Charlottesville, Virginia, to start a church. Not a church within 70 miles. And I had a couple of teenagers and a young daughter. I really worried for Stephen in particular. I talked with other men that had preached in New York and others, and I talked with their children. What was it like? Being raised in a place where you're around no Christians. What was it like at being in a place where you're the only one in your Bible class? That really weighed on me. And when we moved, I remember at that time, I wanted to get Stephen involved with that. I said, Stephen, we want you to be involved in this process. And we went through it. I said, what do you think we ought to do? And Stephen says, well, I think we ought to do what's best for the Lord's will. We went, and I'll tell you something, my son Stephen suffered. My son Nathan, I remember one day Nathan, he had been in school very long, and he went out, he could sit in different places in lunchroom. He'd go outside and sit in lunchroom, so he went out of place in lunchroom, started sitting, and found out later that's where the golf people sat. Now, I mean, Charlottesville was a different place, any place around here, I'll tell you. The golf people, they wear, I don't know how to describe them, but black and other things that Nathan figured out real quickly. He didn't belong there. And I watched my children's faith go through the roof. Stephen told me at one time, he said, Dad, it was easy to go to church in Birmingham to come hot. It was easy. Up here, you got to do it on purpose. And Yvette and I both said that there are a lot of things that happen in our children's life, and we're not putting them up as perfect examples. Things could still go wrong. I'm not trying to put them as examples, but in this one case, I believe the Lord provided. And provided in ways I would have never figured. You would think, well, you can't move to a place where there are Christians. Your children are going to be lost. No, we make provisions for our children. We made provisions when the summer came. We were kind of camping toward Alabama land here. You know, we'd go to the camps and we'd do different things. We found ways to keep them in touch with others. And it's interesting today. You know, there were some people that would not bring their children to a church like the Grange. You know why? Not enough people. Not enough young people. I'm going to tell you again. The building of a biblical faith, more than anything else, will depend on your home. And sometimes going through the small, difficult place, having to cross the Jordan, having to take the walled cities, having to fight and not knowing you're going to live another day, is the thing that builds faith. Remember that. I hope that you'll be encouraged by the lesson. Battles are an opportunity to grow. We'll conclude at this point. Thank you for your attention.